We are talking once again with John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, local writers and activists here to give us a wrap-up of this past week's news. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you both back.
Yes, and I might clear my throat a little bit or maybe even cough because I've had a head cold, so I'm still getting over that.
I can't believe it's December already.
But although I am feeling better.
Although looking out the window, I'm pretty sure it is.
Yes, I see a little bit of snow on the ground.
Yep.
Here, just a dusting.
All right. So this last couple weeks, the city council has been doing finalizing the budget.
Putting its last touches on the budget. There was quite a bit of activity there. The city council had a very long session on Monday the 21st, where they voted on the different pieces of the balancing package, and they made some changes to the budget. They pulled out and replaced some amendments. A few amendments were voted down. Some new amendments were added in. But I just kind of want to touch on what for me anyway are the highlights. One of the key changes that they made was to approve Mayor Harrell's proposal to move the Parking Enforcement Division out of the Seattle Department of Transportation and back into the Seattle Police Department. The reason that they accepted this proposal was to get additional savings to put towards several other programs that the council wanted to fund, including $1 million to the Human Services Department for RV parking and storage associated with folks going into non-congregate shelter, $1 million for the LEED diversion program, $1 million to the Seattle Parks and Rec Department for opening City Hall Park, which has been fenced up and inaccessible for a while now, $250,000 for a mobile advocacy service for survivors of gender-based violence, $1.5 million over 2 years to the Seattle Department of Transportation for the maintenance of major structures, so things like bridges, for example, and $300,000 for redeveloping Memorial Stadium in the Seattle Center, which is used a lot by local high schools and used a lot for smaller events, also used during events like Bumper Shoot and other large cultural events at the Seattle Center. Now, the council's intent is to eventually find the correct place for the parking enforcement officers. And the council has commissioned a multi-departmental task force to try to work with the parking enforcement officers union to figure out where that might be in the city government. Now, Lisa Herbold pointed out that the head of the parking enforcement officers union recommended that they be moved to the new Community Safety and Communications Center, which runs the 911 call center. That was way back in 2020. But it was actually the former mayor's office, that would be Jenny Durkin's office, that lobbied the city council hard to move the parking enforcement officers into the Seattle Department of Transportation instead, even though that's not where they wanted to go. And now the new mayor, Mayor Harrell, is asking the city council to move them back to the Seattle Police Department. But Herbold and other council members made it pretty clear that that's probably not going to be their final landing place, and that task force is probably going to come up with a recommendation that the head of the union of the parking enforcement officers union originally came up with, which is put us in the new Community Safety and Communications Center. Now, both Shama Sawan and Tammy Morales abstained from voting on this amendment. And they both said this, that they couldn't support expanding the footprint of the Seattle Police Department and adding the funding back into the police department budget for this. Teresa Mosqueda also voted against the amendment. So it passed with 6 votes and 1 no vote and 2 abstentions. Now, there were about 150 other amendments, more or less, in the group budget package that hadn't changed from prior budget committee meetings. But Alex Peterson and Sarah Nelson tried to reverse some of the cuts to the new programs that Mayor Harrell wanted by pulling those amendments that would have cut those line items out of the budget. They pulled them out of the group package for individual discussion and voting, and that included cuts to Harrell's plan to expand the Unified Care Team, which is the team that sweeps homeless encampments, cutting money for cleaning up graffiti, and cuts to the Seattle Police Department budget. But because most of those amendments would have put the budget out of balance, the rest of the council voted against the vast majority of voted against making those changes. So those cuts are in the budget. Now, as Budget Chair Teresa Mosqueda pointed out at the beginning of the meeting, the balancing package contained cuts of primarily new programs proposed by the mayor so that the council could avoid cutting existing programs that the council had committed to funding for the long term. She said that most of the things that we're cutting are not ongoing programs. They're new programs that the mayor has added in. But to add those into the budget, he cut other existing programs, and that's not acceptable. Okay. Now, Peterson and Nelson, they knew that. They also knew that by pulling these amendments out of the budget for individual, out of the balancing package for individual discussion and voting, that they risked putting the budget out of balance if any of those items were voted down. Okay. But they chose to do it anyway. So really, they put the council at risk of not passing a balanced budget within their stated time frame by doing that. And it was just a grandstanding move that mostly failed for them. Now, I want to point out that the cuts that were made to the Seattle Police Department were to the department's budget cushion, okay? And by that, I mean the millions of dollars that just sit in the SPD budget in the hopes that a miracle happens and the SPD hires many, many, many more new officers than they currently have the capacity to do, and that they even have the capacity to do over, like, a decade. Okay.
So I'm a little confused by this because at this point, the city council has a history of several years now of the department wildly overestimating the number of new officers that they can hire.
Yes, that's
so
true.
Why are they still doing
this? That's a good question. They're the only department that does this. Now, that's not to say that other city council departments don't have vacant positions that they're hoping to hire and have a little budget cushion for that, but no one has a budget cushion that's 200 to 240 vacant positions like the Seattle Police Department does. Okay, now the current hiring plan for the police department, which the council fully funded this year and is fully funding in this two-year budget for 2023 and 2024, that hiring plan assumes that the Seattle Police Department will hire a net new gain of 15 new officers per year. When you take the total number of new recruits that are coming into the department in a given year minus the people who are leaving, retiring, or just going to a job elsewhere, the net new total is expected to be 15 new hires per year. So there is no reason for them to have a budget cushion that contains funding for 200 positions. And what we came to find out this past week is it's closer to 240 positions. So the council instead chose to maintain a cushion in the SPD for 120 officers, which Lisa Herbold pointed out, it could take the Seattle Police Department 8 years to fill all of those positions, right? It would have been prudent for them to leave, I don't know, maybe 50 positions in case the new hiring plan is wildly successful. But instead, they chose to leave 120 positions and to cut 80 of them. And actually, that 120 positions, as we came to find out this week, is actually going to be 165, that cushion, right?
Okay.
Okay. So that's the so and as so, and I should
so
too.
It's somewhat ironic that the police budget is the one that has the most pork in it.
Oh yeah. Yes, indeed. In addition, I want to point out too that more officers could leave the SPD than they've estimated, and that's been happening regularly over the past few years. So they could end up with even more of a cushion, right? Now, and as Council President Deborah Juarez pointed out, the Council can at any time add funding back to the SPD budget if the SPD manages to, by some incredible miracle, hire all of those 120, or actually now 165 positions in 1 year, or and then comes back to the Council and asks for more funding for more new officers. The Council could say, okay, let's dig around in the budget and we'll find you some more money. Right?
Yes.
They can always do that.
That's why they do the budget amendments in the middle of the year.
Yes, that's why they, you know, early next year, they'll start gathering information on, you know, or I guess the middle of next year, in the summer of next year, they'll gather information on where the 2023 budget is, and they'll get input from the different city departments, and they will add funding for the programs that need it, and they'll cut funding for the programs that are winding down and so forth. Now, in the end, Nelson and Peterson voted against the full budget and moaned about the fact that the budget wasn't funding enough of Mayor Harrell's public safety priorities. And Nelson said that the budget sends the wrong message to people who might want to apply for jobs with the Seattle Police Department, that this he's actually cutting positions. But the budget fully funds the SPD hiring plan.
Yeah, how many, you know, 20-year-olds or whatever, you know, looking at entering the police academy are going over the city budget and drawing conclusions about what to do?
Right, with a fine tooth. I don't think they're doing that, right? Now, Nelson and Peterson actually are out there spreading misinformation now, and they're doing it to score political points. And that misinformation could actually sabotage the SPD's efforts to meet their hiring goals, because the Seattle Times is amplifying that message.
Yes, and, yes, it is. And
yeah,
you know,
and they're saying that they're
Sarah Nelson has an excuse because she has an IQ of 40, but Alex Peterson knows better. Mm-hmm. He really does. He's been a long time city council aide. He knows how the budget process works.
Yeah, and so does the editorial board at the Seattle Times. They know better.
Of course.
But they're doing it because, you know, they're conservatives and they would like to see like 90% of the city budget go towards funding police, I guess. And it's really clear to me that Bruce Harrell's effort to expand the Unified Care Team, in other words, expand sweeps of homeless encampments, is actually not being done in the name of public safety. So cuts to the Unified Care Team are not, you know, shouldn't be included in any comments about the city's public safety program, right?
Those
are being done for cosmetic reasons and to appease Harrell's supporters in the Downtown Business Association.
Yeah, I was also interested to see that you know, crime is actually down the last couple months downtown, and you would never know it reading the Seattle Times.
No, because they're looking at annual statistics, and then they put them into isolation, saying, "Oh, Seattle's dying," right? Instead of saying this is a nationwide trend because of the recession and inflation rates and issues with unemployment and job insecurity because
of
COVID-19.
Lack of affordable housing.
Yeah, and the large number of homeless people in cities where housing is becoming less and less affordable, and that's not just Seattle, it's other cities as well, have the same issues with large numbers of homeless people, rising crime, problems with housing folks who need services, along with publicly funded housing that those cities are just not providing. Well, the good news is that the city of Seattle is trying to provide that. That's one of the things you can see when you check out the budget and when you go and check out the amendment tracker tool. And I want to point to where that is for people. I would suggest that you go to the city council's website, to their homepage, and then you click on the issues tab at the top. And then when the issues page comes up, you can click on the very first top left option that says understanding council's budget amendments, and that takes you to the budget tracker tool. Now, it's great because on with that budget tracker tool, you can filter the list of amendments by which council member signed on to them. You can filter the amendments by which ones passed and which ones failed. You can filter them by department. So if you only want to see the police department amendments, I'm actually on the website looking at it right now. And I'm just going to point out that the budget amendments that the city council passed added some money to the city, to the police department, but it made cuts of those 80 positions I just talked about. It put a proviso on the salary savings. So the funding for those additional 165, that they're not going to be able to fill, it puts a hold on that money so that the police department isn't just able to use that as a slush fund. The city council will, in the middle of the year, come back and look at that money and say, is there somewhere else in the budget where that could be better spent?
And SPD has used that as a slush fund in the past.
In the past, yeah. Without telling the city council what they were going to spend it on, they spent a lot of that money and then came back and said, well, here's what we spent it on. And the city council was like, where did these new programs come? Who approved these? You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was one of the amendments that Peterson and Nelson pulled out of the budget because they wanted a separate vote on it. And when it was pulled out of the budget and discussed and voted on, all the other city council members voted to pass it except for Peterson and Nelson. So their attempt to reverse it failed. Same with that amendment that cut those 80, cut the funding for those, for 80 of those, empty positions and moves the funding back into to the general fund.
But it also illustrates the, Harold, Mayor Harold's mm-hmm. statement on why he is actively looking for new city council members so that he
oh, can yes.
get those votes in next, you know, next time.
Right, right. Now, among the amendments, the other amendments that passed were a whole bunch of reporting requirements that the Seattle Police Department will have to do in the coming year or two, coming two-year budget cycle. And I'm just going to read the list of them here. They're going to have to report on police staffing, overtime, finances, and performance metrics. That would include 911 calls and so forth. That's the same as they've been the quarterly reporting that they've been doing over the past two-year budget cycle. And those reports have been very informative, I think. They'll also have to report on stage two of the risk management demand project. That's the project where they've been analyzing 911 calls and how they're prioritized and how they're answered. They'll have to report on the emphasis patrols. That was an amendment added by Teresa Mosqueda so that the city council will get some clarity on where those emphasis patrols are occurring, who's benefiting from them, and whether or not those emphasis patrols are having an effect, or whether it's just busy work, or if it's just simply cutting down on crime for a short period of time and then it just comes surging back when the emphasis patrol is over, or if it's shifting it to some other part of the city. And then they'll have to report on their backgrounding services. Now, I'm not real super clear on what the backgrounding services are, but my guess is the city council wants to know that too, because it's very common for the police department to say, oh, we've been funding this new – to kind of say after the fact, we've been funding this new program, and then the city council is like, what? What is this new program? You know, what's in this black box of the budget? What is in this line item that is brand new and has kind of a minor description and we don't know what it is? And then among the other amendments, the city council reduced funding for the gunfire detection system. Mayor Harrell had added in $1 million to fund that new program, and the city council said, and Shama Sawant sponsored the amendment, said gunfire detection systems are an unproven technology. Reports that we get from other cities is that they don't really have an effect. Plus, there's the risk of there's also heightened issues about heightened surveillance, particularly in communities of color. So the city council passed that with 8 in favor and one person abstaining from that vote. Now, they also are reducing funding for police equipment by $450,000 in each year of the 2-year budget. That was another request by Chief Diaz and Mayor Harrell to, you know, give the Seattle Police Department some more money to just buy, you know, whatever equipment they wanted. And then
for all those new officers.
Yeah.
They're going to have to equip 150 new officers.
If they hire them, which they're not going to be able to do. But those are the main police department amendments. And so there were some cuts there, but again, in the police department, the cuts were to the police department's cushion, the huge cushion that they have for unhired positions, and to new programs that Mayor Harrell had asked for. It was not they did not take any of the kind of cuts to current existing programs that other departments took. And it's worth mentioning that they actually got increased funding for their new hiring program. So while, again, like in many previous years.
And that new hiring program really isn't doing anything that has been tried and failed on past years.
Yeah. And so, you know, like in many, many past years, the police department budget is not really taking any real cuts. They're actually getting an increase, while other city departments are taking cuts, are losing unfilled positions. They're getting some staff cuts, but very, you know, hopefully very small staff cuts. And some programs are terminating in other city departments, not in the Seattle Police Department. Okay. So when Nelson and Peterson says, well, the city council's not funding, you know, enough police, you know, positions, they're lying. Okay. And they know they're lying. All right. Well, maybe Nelson doesn't know she's lying, but Peterson is lying.
Her staff people probably do.
Yeah. And the ones that are
telling her what to say.
Yeah, when the Seattle Times says that, they're lying as well, or else they're just deeply ignorant, and that's inexcusable for a mainstream media company that's that large. For their reporters to not have done enough homework to know this is insane. So that's the police department budget. I also want to point out that there is some great amendments, particularly in the to things like the housing budget, to allocate jumpstart funding for things like multifamily rental production and homeownership, for non-permanent supportive housing services, things like like the Home for Good program and various other programs to, you know, fund things like the Belltown Cottages for Use as Low-Income Housing. That was an amendment proposed by Andrew Lewis, and one of the substitute amendments proposed by Andrew Lewis to use Jumpstart funding to, you know, help purchase existing housing that's up for sale excuse me, and then, or that is not being used, and create low-income housing. So some really, really good things in the budget that the city council was able to fund, with Jumpstart tax funds being a little bit, quite a bit higher than expected. They were able to allocate those funds, according to the, priorities in the Jumpstart payroll tax bills that they've passed. So there's some really great things in the budget. And I recommend that you go to the City Council's website, click that Issues tab, and then click the Understanding Council's Budget Amendments, and then just kind of go through, take a look at them yourself. You, like I say, you can filter them by council member, pick your council member for your district, and see what their priorities are. That can be very informative for you. If you think your council member's doing a good job, or you think they're not doing a good job, you can go check up on them. Okay, and the two at-large council members, Teresa Mosqueda and Sarah Nelson, who everybody reelects, you can see what they've done for the budget, or to try to maybe obstruct the budget process.
I am surprised that you're not seeing a URL.
What's that? Oh no, it's a long one. So it's just easier. I think it's just easier to go to the City Council Budgets page, click the Issues tab, and then click Understanding the Council's Budget Amendments. You can, there's also people, links there too.
People listen to garbage pop songs that are 3 minutes long. Come on.
Right. You can, and also when you bring up the list of amendments, if you're looking at, say, the housing amendments, there's a link over to the right of each amendment that says Read More. When you click on that, it opens the amendment in a new tab, and you can read a little bit more about it and see.
Yeah, and you can also read the actual text if you want.
Yeah, from that Issues tab, I think there's a link to, let me go back here, there's a link to, actually, if you go to Committees instead of the Issues tab, and you go to the Budget Committee, there's, there's a link to all the amendments that they discussed, and you can click on each one of those and read the full text of the amendment, which is, gets kind of dry. So I like to read the summaries instead, unless it's something I really feel I need to dig into.
So the final vote on the budget from the City Council was 6-3, I believe.
Yes, Shama Sawant, as she does every year, voted against it because it didn't fund enough of the priorities that people need in order to fully be housed and taken care of in the city.
And way too much of the police department.
Yeah, and way too much of things that she feels doesn't matter. Way too much of the police department, way too much of, you know, economic development, you know, marketing, stuff that is, you know, for the benefit of businesses rather than for the human needs of her constituents.
So doesn't Mayor Harrell have the ability on a 6-3 to do a veto, since it wasn't a 7-9?
No, it needs to be a 6-3 to pass. He can do a veto, but I think...
Yeah, he can veto anything.
He can veto it, but I think if it came back to the council, Sawant would probably join her other colleagues to pass it, so.
And I believe they only need 6 votes to override a veto.
Yeah, and I think they only really need 6. The risk is that he vetoes it and there aren't enough council members to support it who are in the chamber, because we're coming up to the holidays.
Right.
And that's when people like to take trips out of town. But there's less of a risk of that now, since the city council's been meeting via Zoom link. The assumption is that any council member who is out of town could join a council session via Zoom link and still vote. And in fact,
Lisa
Herbold actually did that on the final vote. She joined through her cell phone and voted for the final budget package.
Yeah. One other item that you didn't have on the list, I saw this week that women in black are having their monthly event this coming Wednesday, City of Seattle set another record where 37 homeless people died this last month.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those would be...
And now that the weather has turned freezing, that number is going to be bad this month, too.
Yeah, and those would be homeless people that we don't have shelter for. And that as Shama Sawant said when she voted against the budget, you know, it's not like the city doesn't have the money for it. It's there. It's just that it's a matter of priorities.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, she had pushed for a further increase on the Amazon tax, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get any other
didn't get any to, other council members no. to agree to that.
So.
Yeah. No. And, you know, you wonder how many people could be housed with the funding for 150 non-existent officers.
Yeah, you kind of wonder that, don't you? Yeah, and maybe some support for the King County Regional, some more support for the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, like funding closer to what they requested rather than just, you know, instead of giving you the money you request, we're going to give you, you know, 10 to 15% of it. And let you limp along.
To be fair, that was Harold's original proposal. The council did bump that up, but it was still nowhere near
what they requested. Yeah, and it really just lets the King County Regional Homelessness Authority sort of limp along on life support. It isn't really giving them the full support that they need.
Yeah, because the City of Seattle's budget is way larger than any of the other municipalities that are in King County.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, and I should point out too that the King County Regional Homelessness Authority goes to the King County Council and asks for funding too, and the King County Council tends to give them what they ask for, but the City of Seattle has not done that. Part of that's because of the necessity for budget cuts this year, but again, part of it's priorities, right?
Yeah, and the mayors we keep electing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else on that?
Nope.
All right. How about news about the new capital gains tax?
Yeah, there was some good news this week for the state. The Washington State Supreme Court ruled that they ruled to issue a stay on a lower court decision that had ruled that the state's new capital gains tax is unconstitutional. Okay. In 2021, the Washington State Legislature passed a bill to enact a capital gains tax on sales of long-term capital assets. So things like stocks, bonds, business interests, and other investments. Opponents very quickly filed a lawsuit against that tax. And in March of this year, a superior court judge in Douglas County, that's in eastern Washington, ruled that the tax, quote, violates the uniformity requirement, end quote, because the tax itself imposes a 7% tax on long-term capital gains over $250,000 per household. Okay. But there's no tax on capital gains under $250,000. So the judge ruled that the tax was not uniform and therefore unconstitutional. He then issued a stay on the state's ability to collect the tax. But this week, the Washington State Supreme Court reversed that stay. So now the State Department of Revenue, the Washington State Department of Revenue, can now begin putting together the tax form that folks who have more than $250,000 in capital gains will need to fill out next April and pay the tax. And then the State Supreme Court will start hearing arguments in the case in January. And if the State Supreme Court overturns the tax next year, then any taxes that the State Department of Revenue has collected would then need to be refunded to taxpayers along with interest. In the meantime, it's really important to remember that there are a bunch of exemptions to the new capital gains tax, and that includes real estate. That's all real estate.
Wow,
yeah.
That's a pretty big exemption.
Big exemption, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so, there's more. There's more.
Retirement accounts like a 401k or an IRA account is not subject to the new capital gains tax, a family-owned small business, certain depreciable assets, timber and timberlands, livestock used for farming or ranching, and commercial fishing rights. Okay, so there's a lot there, you know, and I think there's an exemption also for automobile dealerships too. So the vast majority of people who would need to file and pay the tax are very, very wealthy individuals and their investment partnerships. So it really is kind of like a wealth, in a way, a tax on the wealthy. And the rest of us would never have to file a return or pay the tax. So that's one thing to be very aware of when you hear about this. It is a source of revenue that is not going to impact, you know, well over 95% of the residents of Washington State. So that was very, very good news this week. And I think it's kind of an indication to me that the Supreme Court, that the state Supreme Court is leaning towards approving the tax rather than overturning it. I got my fingers crossed on that, and we'll follow up on that next year.
Okay, moving on. The Department of Health apparently has updated their website, John.
Yeah, December 1st, beginning of the month, Washington State Department of Health quietly decided that the pandemic is over, and its COVID page, which gave, you know, tabulated demographic information on who has gotten the disease, you know, their number of hospitalizations, et cetera, is a very helpful compilation from all 39 counties. They're pulling that down. That page no longer exists now, because apparently the pandemic no longer exists. Now King County, Seattle King County Public Health, still publishes those numbers, thankfully. So we can still get that information locally, but it's very hard to get it from much of the state now, because, in, you know, some of the state hasn't been especially transparent about that to begin with. And with the profusion of at-home testing kits, the number of people tested versus the number of people who are infected with the virus, those numbers have not been reliable for several months because most people at home don't report their results to the state. So, you know, that also would be an argument for ending that particular page. But again, it's, you know, since it's an apples to apples from week to week, you could see what the trends are. And you could see whether the new variants are making the pandemic worse or not. For example, in the middle of winter, when people are indoors in poorly ventilated spaces, and mask wearing, at least anecdotally from what I've seen, is very, very spotty, especially outside health facilities. So, yeah, pandemic's over. Good news, everybody. Woohoo. Merry Christmas.
No.
Somebody tell SARS-CoV-2. I don't think the virus has actually gotten the memo on that, but
no, I don't think so either.
It's supposed to arrive as a Christmas card later this month. So
yeah, an e-card actually. It's going viral.
Oh, those horrible e-cards that certain people like to send out.
Yes,
I think they're fun, but
I know they mean well. I just
yes.
Speaking of e-cards,
Mike is old school. He likes his cards paper by a mail.
I like to know that. Yeah, perfect.
Mommy, good. What's paper?
I like to know that a perfectly good carbon processor has been cut down for
your Christmas card. In addition to all the little sprinkly stuff that's glued on.
Yeah. And while its neighbor is in your living room now as a Christmas tree.
Yeah. Well, it's baby.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's a perfect segue. Speaking of babies. speaking of babies, talk about our former president who's.
Oh, yeah. He had a very bad week. He lost his pacifier. And is now back on Twitter. Fortunately, people are fleeing Twitter in droves, and I'll talk about that in a minute.
He's actually not, he's got permission to be on Twitter. He got okayed by, Musk, but he's not actually using Twitter as far as I know. Oh.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't know since I'm not using Twitter either. But
that's going to be more and more people, I think.
For different reasons, I think. But I guess probably in Trump's case, it's because so many people are reading him on Trump's Truth Social now. Trump had a very bad week, legally speaking. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals struck down his hand-appointed judge in South Florida's ruling a couple months ago that required the Department of Justice to submit all of the materials it seized in its raid on the Mar-a-Lago compound in August to a special master to determine which ones might be subjected to executive privilege. Now, the current president, which is actually Joseph Biden, it's not Donald Trump, has already ruled that any of that would be not eligible. It's outside the scope of executive privilege. So they're not going to claim executive privilege. And it's only the current president that can decide that. So Trump cannot unilaterally decide or retroactively decide or decide in his head and then announce it, you know, months or years later to invoke executive privilege on something. But he successfully delayed it for a few months, got a judge in South Florida to agree to him, and the 11th Circuit this week overturned that ruling and said, yes, the Department of Justice can go ahead and use the documents that it seized in its criminal investigations of Trump for squirreling away so many top-secret classified documents that really should not be outside a secure facility in D.C., much less in a private residence in Florida. So he lost that battle. The Trump Organization has been on trial this week. They had closing arguments on Friday, and they'll get the jury instructions, and the jury will start deliberating on Monday on a number of charges related to the Trump Organization's alleged overvaluing and undervaluing of different assets, depending on who they were talking to, whether it was tax filings or insurance claims or, you know, whatever. The valuations apparently would fluctuate wildly depending on which way would be the most favorable for them. And we first heard about this about 3 years ago when Michael Cohen testified to Congress about it. And it took that long to draw a criminal case together because of the incredible complexity of it. And we're finally getting to the moment of reckoning. A guilty verdict on any of these could be absolutely crippling for the Trump Organization as a business entity. But that's not really where Trump's cash is coming from now. It's coming from millions of small, gullible donors who are donating to his reelection campaign and to various other PACs that, if you read the fine print, he can actually use that money personally for whatever he likes. So it's not necessarily going to a reelection campaign. So you can see his announcement immediately after the midterms last month as more of another fundraising grift than it is a serious run for president as yet. That happened. And then we saw the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, convicted of seditious conspiracy this week. That was a huge conviction for the Department of Justice. It sets the tone for others possibly to be charged with that, including some of the organizers of the January 6th attempted coup d'etat. Up to and including the former president himself, which we got a number of pieces of damning evidence in the congressional investigation that is we're going to find out in the next month or so that committee will be issuing its final report because, of course, as soon as the Republicans take over the House of Representatives, they're going to disband the committee and start attempting to criminally charge all of its members. With, you know, making the president look bad, which is, I understand is a felony in Republican circles. So there was that. And then, speaking of allies of the former president, Alex Jones filed for bankruptcy this week. That was expected since he had a jury verdict in his Sandy Hook case that found him liable for over $1 billion worth of damages. And even he does not have that kind of money. So
this is another
attempt to hide his assets and avoid paying the plaintiffs.
Yeah, there's some question about what he's worth, because even before he started, even before the trials started, when the lawsuit was filed against him, he started transferring assets to family members and to other companies. And I think there's some question about whether or not he's engaging in financial fraud by doing that, trying to hide his assets from the court.
And a bankruptcy court judge can hold him accountable for that.
Yeah.
So we'll, because that's not generally not smiled upon in bankruptcy proceedings.
No.
So we shall see.
That can get you in serious trouble.
Yep. And then also in a similar vein, Elon Musk's policies and Twitter have resulted, according to researchers, in hate speech going up sharply over the past month. Some 600% for use of the N-word, 800% for anti-Semitic slurs, LGBTQ sentiments have been up sharply as well. It's still a small percentage of the overall postings, but Twitter is quickly turning into exactly the kind of free speech zone that that Elon Musk apparently has envisioned, which is a safe haven for haters, misogynists, bigots of all kinds. And at the same time, both advertisers and users are leaving the platform in droves. So it's going to be very interesting, because we really haven't seen a major social media platform collapse like this in such quick order, really ever. Even old ones like AOL and Friendster and all that, those took a few years to be supplanted by newer competitors. I think Twitter, that might happen more quickly, but we'll see.
Meanwhile, the many of the competing apps that people are attempting to migrate to are having their own problems, because they weren't really developed for large numbers of people suddenly.
They're going through growing pains. Yeah. And I think that's to be expected when you're being asked to substitute for one of the largest social media platforms in the world, which is undergoing its own kind of chaos.
Yep.
And it's interesting. People are also learning how to do new things when it comes to social media, like cross post and link.
Yes.
And post in multiple places. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's something you would ordinarily see from folks who are employed as social media experts, who know how to do that and how to be efficient with their social media postings and post in multiple places. Something that ordinary people are starting to learn to do, which I find a lot of fun to watch as someone who works in IT.
Yeah, I would appreciate it if ordinary people also had a better filter for understanding what is and is not true.
Yes.
That would be a nice skill to see developed as well.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we're starting to see people struggle with too, especially on Twitter, where it's the Wild West now in terms of truth versus lies.
Yep. It wasn't before, but it's much more so now.
Yeah, now it's the wild, wild west.
Exactly.
Yes.
All right. Defense of Marriage Act.
Yes. Good news on that front. The Senate passed the Defense of Marriage Act this week. That was somewhat different from the bill that the House has passed. So hopefully this month the House will pass that bill as well before it adjourns. And then Biden has already said he would sign it. What that bill does actually is force states to recognize same-sex marriages and to recognize same-sex marriages from other states. It preempts the possibility of the Supreme Court ruling that same-sex marriages are no longer constitutional, which many people were fearing in the wake of the Hobbs decision this year. So that's very good news, and hopefully the Congress Yeah, and it would be nice if the Congress would be able to preempt some of the other Supreme Court decisions that people are fearing, like a rollback of Griswold, which is the privacy decision that allows contraception. Obviously, the Republicans are hoping for a congressional ban on abortions federally, but that is not going to happen certainly under Biden's watch. Maybe after 2024 with President DeSantis, it might. But, that was good news this week to see that at least that getting through and added to the Democrats' records of accomplishment this year. Mm-hmm. Which when we get to our year-end, summaries, I think that's one of the real underreported stories of the year is that despite themselves, Democrats were really pretty effective this year. And one of the overhyped stories of the year has to be all the infighting within the Democratic Party, because we got way more ink on that than we did on what they managed to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in comparison to what we're seeing in the Republican Party, you can't really claim that there's a lot of infighting in the Democratic Party anymore. That's not going to fly with me.
Yeah, for example, the Democrats have already solidified who their leaders are going to be for the next Congress.
Yeah.
The Republicans are tearing each other apart and find ways to prevent McCarthy from becoming House Speaker.
Yeah, and that's in spite of the fact that the Democrats have a whole bunch of new progressive members entering the House in particular this year. So the progressive caucus is getting bigger. And but they're not using their muscle to disrupt the functioning of government quite in the same way that the right-wing Republicans are doing.
No, because they actually want government to work.
Yes, exactly.
All right, moving on. Mass shooting news this week.
Yeah, actually, it was last week because we weren't on last weekend. There were two really bad mass shootings last week. The first, of course, was in Colorado Springs, where five people died in an LGBTQ bar. Colorado Springs has a lot of symbolic resonance as the longtime home of Focus on the Family and a city that made a concerted effort in the 80s and 90s to draw other conservative Christian groups to the city. So there's a long history of anti-gay sentiment in that city. And, we haven't heard anything yet, at least that I've seen, on the gunman's motive. Somebody was arrested in that shooting. And then in Chesapeake, Virginia, near Norfolk, a store manager opened fire in a break room, killing several employees, before killing himself as well. That was 3 days after Colorado Springs. And once again, these kinds of shootings almost never happen in other countries, but they do happen with some regularity in the United States. And particularly, with the Colorado Springs shooting, although we don't have a motive for the gunman yet, it's hard to believe that that wasn't motivated by some kind of anti-gay animus. And we've seen so many different hate shootings, concurrent with the rise in hate speech. And, of course, it was very much concurrent with the rise to power of Donald Trump, who really mainstreamed the hate speech in this country. It was not that long ago, 2015, actually, when, racist sentiments or anti-gay sentiments or anti-Semitic sentiments were not considered acceptable in polite society. Now it's almost assumed in one of the two major parties in this country. And that has led to a lot of people, mentally ill or on the fringes of society, taking those sentiments to heart and trying to act on them. Very, very disturbing kind of stuff. And of course, we've seen some very high profile anti-Semitic, incidents the past few weeks, particularly around Thanksgiving, where Donald Trump, hosted, Kanye West and Nick Fuentes, who is a notorious Holocaust denier, for dinner in his Mar-a-Lago estate, and then has subsequently claimed, well, he didn't really know who this Fuentes character was. And Kanye West, for his part, who
can't claim he doesn't know who Kanye West is.
Yeah.
You can't be with Kanye West and not know who he is.
There might be a couple people in Nepal who don't know who he is, but that's about it. And meanwhile, Kanye West.
There are all kinds of people surrounding Donald Trump who I'm sure manage his agenda. So.
Yeah, you don't get to dinner with any former president, even Donald Trump, without a whole lot of vetting going on first.
Yeah.
There are definitely people around
Donald Trump and related to Donald Trump who could inform him of who Kanye West and Nick Fuentes are.
It was Nick Fuentes who he was claiming he didn't. He wasn't
right.
Donald yes, Trump. That's what I said.
Like I said, advisors, family members, they know who he is.
Yeah. And incidentally, Kanye West, who is running for president in 2024, in case you want to, get your primary vote in now, hired Nick Fuentes this week to his campaign staff. So that kind of tells you where he's coming from. Yeah, kind of ugly all the way around. And really not something we've ever heard from any other former president. We don't have these kind of scandals, let alone somebody who has already declared that he's going to run for president again in 2024, which is, less than 2 years away now.
And which is kind of deepening the split in the Republican Party, too, because there are many, many Republicans, sort of more mainstream Republicans, who are now saying this guy is tearing the party apart by claiming he's the lead candidate for president when there's no way that the bulk of the American public are going to vote for somebody who is that openly racist.
Not to mention facing all the legal troubles that he's facing.
Exactly.
Many of which could get more serious over the next couple of years.
And that he continues to tweet and to support the folks who rioted on January 6th at the Capitol, as he did again this past week.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of the people in the GOP are blaming him personally for his choices across the country for people running.
And people who lost.
Yes.
Many of his endorsees in key races did not win this past midterm. Mm-hmm. That was encouraging. Particularly people who have been, denying the results of the 2020 election, lost key races for Secretary of State and Governor in a number of swing states.
Yeah, and the final one, Herschel Walker, is looking like he's not going to be able to win his race either. One of the key things in that race is that Herschel Walker is been under fire by folks who are claiming that he is not a resident of Georgia. And they've been able to produce records showing that, he isn't really a resident of Georgia, that the property he's claiming as his primary residence is owned by his wife. His name is not on the title, and that he actually doesn't spend much time there, and that he is registered to vote and votes in another state.
Texas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whether
he wins or not, that could put his status as a representative for Georgia in jeopardy.
Because his wife doesn't really want to spend time with him or be in the same state that he's in.
That's also very public right now.
But at least that's one way of making sure that she doesn't have to get an abortion. They're not in the same state. At least not from him. But anyway, we digress. Part of me, the sadistic part of me, would like to see Walker win just because we could laugh at him for the next 6 years. But, it would be a train wreck for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that now without him winning. So.
That's true. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, we're pretty much out of time.
Okay, I would like to encourage people to pay attention to the protests going on in China. They are extraordinary. And we'll talk about that hopefully a little bit more next week.
All right. We'll talk to you both next week.
Sounds good.
I'll be here.